Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
This episode of Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. If you would like to learn how to support this podcast, visit www.patreon.com/writingexcuses. Season 13, Episode 34.
This is Writing Excuses Q&A on character arcs.
15 minutes long.
Because you're in a hurry.
And we're not that smart.
I'm Brandon.
I'm Valin.
I'm Dan.
I'm Howard.
And we have your questions. Ian asks, how do you fulfill your promises about a character arc without being cliche? That's a good question.
I don't know. I'm a very cliche author.
Get on it.
Okay, fulfilling problems without being cliche. I don't know if there's a direct tracking line between those.
Okay, here's another question.
Let me approach it a different way.
The next question is by Connor, and I think it's the same sort of thing.
Okay.
How do you subvert a common character arc without it feeling like betraying a promise to the reader? That's what they're all getting at.
How do you give them what they want without just being obvious about it?
Yes,
and
that's
how do you
the question.
Subvert that without feeling like you've deceived them?
There are so very, very many movies, stories out there, whatever, where the character arc for our main character is discovering the importance of their friends. We see that all the time. If at the beginning of your story, you know that's where you're headed and you can predict it, if that is predictably the resolution, you may have cliche problems. You can still fulfill a promise along those lines. You just need to not... I use the predictability test all the time. If I can predict a line of dialogue in a movie, then something's probably wrong.
Mm-hmm.
If I can predict, this next scene, this is where they kiss. He's going to drop something. They're going to...
Now, let me say, there are certain stories and readers where fulfilling the expectation in the way that you anticipate and want is the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
It depends on the story you're telling, the way you, the promises you make. Some books will promise to subvert expectations and some books will promise not to. In fact, I remember reading through several romance novel entries on Amazon where the description of the book says in big bolded letters, this is a book with a happily ever after and no cheating. And that was repeated on most of the pages I went to in this subgenre.
Mm-hmm.
Big, bold letters. That is a promise that trope is not going to get subverted because the reader's looking for this. So you really have to decide, am I trying to subvert things or not?
Yeah, I remember when we had Mike Stackpole on the show and he talked about writing plots as playing Name That Tune with your readers and how you want to be just ahead. If they guess the tune too early, then you've lost them. But I do think there is another kind of reader that just wants to sing along with the song because they know
right.
it so well.
And there's nothing wrong with that. I would say this is something that I really enjoy doing, is playing Name the Tune with the reader. And the way that you make it not feel like a betrayal, but not like a cliche either, is you make sure that this promise can get fulfilled in multiple ways.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And that the one you pick, it's not necessarily the first one they'd pick, but it's in some way more fulfilling. So you mm-hmm. kind of have to identify what is the need and how do you fill it. And then you promise you're going to fill it in a certain way in the middle of the book, but then you give a better promise. You always have to do a better job.
One of the things that I do a lot, we talk about Hollywood formula a lot on this show and how you need to set out knowing what a character wants. I have found that if I can make sure my character really wants at least two things, then I can totally screw one of those up on purpose, and you will still be happy when he or she gets the other one. And that's a way of making sure that the character arcs are you know, still driving this plot.
Well, and I think if you've invested enough time in making sure that your character is original and unique, then the way that they're going to solve that problem or get to or what we want fulfilled will also be original and unique. You need to write a character that is not like anyone else, and so it makes sense that that character would solve the problem this way.
So we've got multiple questions on a similar topic, so I'm going to kind of meld them all together. This is from Ben and from Jessica and from Anthony, and they're asking about multiple character arcs in the same story. Do you need to complete each character arc in the same story? Like Jessica asked, for a character in a series, should each book contain a complete character arc, or should the entire series cover one large arc? And then Ben's question is, how do you tie multiple character arcs together when you're writing the first book of a trilogy? A lot of questions about lots of character arcs. How do you interweave them? What do you do?
If they all form, and when I think of character arc, I think of the, you know, the narrative curve, that, you know, that bump shape that drops off kind of sharply at the end. If all of the character arcs in the book follow that same shape, it's going to feel kind of artificial and kind of weird. If, however, all of the arcs are staggered to the point that one person is in crisis at the end of the story and you can tell it's completely unresolved, that may feel unsatisfying. And so what I try and do is find plateaus, you know, stopping points along the arc, along a character's arc, where for this story, I can park them there, maybe for the whole story. Their arc is not complete. Their arc is six books long, but I can park them there and we'll be happy. And so thinking of it as tiers along this arc and within a given story, which steps are they moving between? That model works really well for me.
Yeah, as an example, the original Star Wars trilogy, Luke and Han each have an arc in each movie, and it goes and it's complete. Whereas Leia has one larger arc that takes all three movies to fulfill.
All right, let's go ahead and stop for our book of the week. Our book of the week is Fat Angie.
Fat Angie by E.E. Charlton Trujillo. One of the things that I love about this book is that it's both funny, but just really has some tender moments. It's about a girl who is overweight in high school. Her older sister is in the military and missing. She is the only one who thinks that her sister is still alive out there somewhere. So I think that for a lot of military families, this is might, you know, have a lot of meaning for them. She, in the beginning of the book, has tried to kill herself, commit suicide in front of the entire school, and is working through a lot of those issues of just learning to figure out the kind of person she is, the kind of person that she wants to be, what she wants to be known for, and that is not this act that she is currently known for. It's a wonderful romance in terms of the fact that she's trying to figure out her sexual identity. And I think that the way that the author handles this book is just perfect. The mix of just being so realistic and having the teenage angst of dealing with these really important issues, but handling them very realistically.
Excellent. So that's called Fat Angie.
Mm-hmm.
By E.E. Charlton Trujillo.
Mm-hmm.
All right, questions. Back to questions from the audience. There are several questions about iconic characters. John asks, what separates an iconic character from a caricature or a stereotype?
Ooh, interesting.
Well, I think that you're still going to make that character unique in some ways. I mean, not everyone is Superman and has the powers that he does and has run as fast as he can and has a super strength. He's an iconic hero, and so is James Bond, and they have completely different attributes. So I think what defines an iconic character is, and we've discussed this in a previous episode, is just the situations that they're thrown into and the way they react to them.
Well, and I think that a caricature is arguably much more exaggerated and one-sided than an iconic character. You look if I say Captain Kirk, most people are going to imagine a hotshot who just sleeps with weird alien women and disregards the rules. You look at the original series, he is definitely an iconic character. He doesn't change from episode to episode, but he is much more layered and nuanced and interesting than what we tend to think. He is an iconic character. Our vision of him now, looking back, is very caricatured.
Right, and I think it's good to separate iconic, meaning not changing, from an archetype, which an iconic character can totally be. But Mr. Spock is also iconic. He's not changing through that series, but also very layered, very interesting, very in conflict with himself. And so separate those two things in your mind. And if you're worried about cliches and stereotypes, you can build a character who is not one, who still doesn't change, if that's what you're interested in doing.
If your iconic character can be, in your book, replaced by an iconic character of similar skill set from someone else's series, it might be a caricature.
So next question on iconic characters is, have you ever had an iconic character upon further exploration become a character in need of an arc? How would you make that transition? Now, this is dangerous because we've talked about how comics basically keep trying to do this and then get forced to reboot and things like this. I totally think it's possible. In fact, I see a lot of books, what you will see people doing is there'll be a series where there's a main character and kind of several iconic individuals around them. And the main character has an arc, and then they write a second book that takes one of these characters that is maybe was a little bit, you know, didn't have an arc in the first book, didn't change, and then they get an arc, and then they get an arc.
You can see this in a ton of webcomics in particular. You know, Sluggy Freelance, that was just joke a week and then turned into a long story. Same with Sam and Fuzzy. Same with Dr. McNinja. Same with, I think, Schlock.
I gave him a character arc. He's an iconic hero. And then I gave him a character arc and established a new baseline for him. And because it's not a brand like Frosted Flakes or DC Comics, I am allowed to keep those changes. I don't have to reboot. I think better examples than comics are Death in the Terry Pratchett books. For most of those books, he is always the same character, and he's delightful when he shows up. And then we have a book in which Death decides to retire for a while and becomes, I think, Bill Dorr. And it's beautiful. He gets his own little arc. Hogfather kind of gives him his own little arc. This totally, you can do it.
All right. How do you continue a character story after they've completed their original arc? I love this question.
So are we talking about sequels?
Yes. I think a sequel. You've written a story. This one didn't have a name on it. Whoever asked this question, good question. You've written a story. The characters had a big, complete arc. And then you're going to put them in the next book. What do you do?
What are your parents' roles in your story? Because when they were teenagers, they were very distraught individuals who were the heroes of their own story, probably every bit as self-absorbed as the average teenager. But now that you're growing up or that you're an adult, what are your parents' roles in your story? Because fundamentally, I think that's the question that's being asked here. When we emerge from our period of change and stabilize, what do we become to the next generation of heroes?
Or even if you look at it in terms of a shorter time frame for a young adult book, you're looking at maybe just a few months sometimes from beginning to end. But the arc suggests that their character starts in one place and grows and becomes something else. And so I think that you just look at what are the like, this person is now not exactly the same person they were before. They are, you take that character and what they've learned and then throw them in a new situation and see mm-hmm. how what they've learned can affect whatever they're going into next.
Yeah, a lot of the time when this is a problem, it's because the character was originally designed around one specific conflict and there's not enough depth to keep going. You look at what happened with Data in the Next Generation movies. Once he finally got emotions, the writers had no idea what to do with him. And compare that to, say, Oz in the Buffy series, who went through tons of different phases of his life and completed long character arcs, but he was an interesting enough and layered enough character that the writers were able to say, well, what can we do with him next?
Well, and that's why I use the parent example. Parents are not, it doesn't have to be that kind of a time frame. It can be a fairly short time frame. They are, for many people, sources of stability, sources of rescue, sources of advice. They are, for other people, sources of continual conflict because they disagree with them. When you have a character who has completed their arc, if you want to tell a story about a character arc, you're telling somebody else's story. And the character who has completed their arc features into that story in some way that's critically important.
Last question comes from Kalika. They ask, how much does a character need to change in their arc? Does it always have to be a major permanent life redefining change?
I don't know if that's always realistic, but I think it needs to be enough that you can see a difference.
Satisfy me. If you've promised me that this person is going to be changed by the experience in this book, I have to be satisfied that a change has occurred. It can be a tiny thing. It can be a big thing. I guess it depends on the conflict. It depends on the character. Mm-hmm. It depends on the length of the story.
I think figuring out what you want to do so that you can present the right conflict and make the right promise. You know, if you set us up where this person's conflict is that they are a terrible person who can't connect with everyone else because they're mean all the time, and then they end the story still a terrible person and mean all the time, you haven't resolved the conflict or kept the promise you made in the beginning. If you present that same character but give us a different conflict that is smaller and less life-changing, then okay, I'm willing to go along with them still being a jerk at the end, because you've still resolved the thing you told me you were going
to
resolve.
Right. And I don't think everything has to be magically perfect in the end. I just want to see some change, some growth. Mm-hmm.
All right. We're out of time. Thank you guys so much for sending in your questions. These were great questions. Dan has a writing prompt.
Yes, I do.
Did you forget?
Yes.
Ha ha! I warned you ahead of
time. I know. I don't have a writing prompt.
Howard, do you have a writing prompt?
I did at the beginning of the episode, but then Dan assured us that he...
I assured no one. I merely said, okay.
He said, you said, I'll have this by the end. I'm on this. I felt very assured.
Dear listener, we actually, before recording this, talked about how we used to blindside our guests with writing prompts. And so Brandon is taking great delight in now doing it to us.
Even though
it's technically not even blindsiding because he told me. I want you to write, dear listener, a story in which Brandon asks someone for a writing prompt and that person is unprepared, and then Brandon receives great karmic justice.
Ouch. Pretty savage there.
All right, I guess I'll allow it.
Alternatively.
I didn't say which side of karma Brandon was on. Yeah.
Alternatively, do an image search on mountains. Trace a mountain onto a piece of paper. Now make that outline the arc for your character.
This has been Writing Excuses. I hope we didn't give you excuses. Now go write.
Writing Excuses is a Dragonsteel production, jointly hosted by Brandon Sanderson, Dan Wells, Mary Robinette Kowal, and Howard Taylor. This episode was mastered by Alex Jackson.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.